For August the 13th, 2021, we talk about the World's End Club, Jupiter Hell, and Mother Gunship. Welcome to Level 381. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
I'm David Mysmith.
And I'm Jala Frendez.
This combination is rare, so the order is all messed up.
Showdown buttons versus zippers.
Oh gosh. Welcome to The Level. This is a podcast for people who love video games. An unexpected four style tonight. Good to have you here, David.
Hey, good to be here.
Yeah, good to have you here, Jala.
Surprise!
Yeah. What's new, Joe?
Well, good to have you here, Dennis. I see where I rank.
I expect. Yeah. No. I take you.
I
for
mean,
granted.
We thought that was assumed.
I didn't mean to leave you out. It was just. What's new, Joe?
Well, I started doing a little bit of hiking around because, you know, with COVID threat level red, don't want to go do anything around humans. So yeah. Dave and I have been doing some hiking around in the wilderness. But other than that, I also wanted to go ahead and mention it at the top of the episode, recorded an episode of the SNES podcast talking about Chrono Trigger. So it's not going to be like the WAF treatment. There is really no comparison to the 4 hours that you guys put in for that. But they had actually already talked about Chrono Trigger previously. So this was kind of a revisit to talk about its impact generally, some different impressions about the game just from one of the hosts had never played it until this show. So that kind of a thing. And then also just kind of where it sits in like everybody's brains, you know, what kind of memories people have about it and all of that. So really fun episode. So definitely go check that out.
Yeah. Check that out. And if you find yourself wanting the WAF treatment, we do have a WAF about it coming out this week. Yeah. It's an interesting game, an interesting story about kind of the creation of the game stuff. The stuff is like, I mean, since I last looked at it, come to light about it, specifically just, its early production and how it ended up happening. It's cool. I was real happy to, I'm happy to have it in the air.
Wait, so good come to light or bad come to light?
No, good come to light. Just stuff that I didn't know about the production process at Square. Obviously, it was Japanese video game development in the 90s, so it ruined the developers' lives and their wives left them and stuff. But that's just the usual thing. Crunch. It's a thing in the industry, and it ought not be. Cool. So is there a URL for that, or should people just search for SNES podcast?
I do not have the URL for that particular episode yet, but I will get you an URL that you can plug into the show notes.
Yeah. Cool. I don't really have anything going on over here. Just been a bunch of work, like usual. Dennis, how about you? What's going on?
What is going on? I think we're in like the final couple of weeks before kids go back to school. So I've got whatever version of senioritis you would apply to parents whose kids are about to go back to school.
Okay.
So home stretch, baby. we're coming up on a vacation. We're going to do an Ireland trip as a whole family. That's right. I'm packing 3 kids under the age of 7 onto an 8-hour flight because we just hate ourselves and want to suffer.
Wait, did you say Ireland or Ireland?
Ireland.
Ireland.
Yes. As in across the ocean.
Which is also an island.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I was unclear. When you said 8 hours, I started to put it together, but those are different vacations. Both can be cool.
Yeah, both can be cool. And hopefully Ireland, well, first off, hopefully we will be able to take it. We've gotten all the trip insurance and are kind of
right.
Hand is over the big red button for if stuff gets totally whacked.
Mm-hmm.
But hopefully we'll be able to make it work.
I mean, technically we should have what, about 2 weeks into it, week and a half until Delta burns out if it follows the pattern.
Now, there's no place like America, baby. We're going to break that trend.
We're just going to inject everyone with bleach before we get on the plane.
Cool. Put the light inside.
Yeah. But no, hopefully in however many months it'll be looking good enough to travel. And if not, like I said, we've gotten all the protections for that.
Yeah.
But that, so that plus school is just like all kinds of life downshifting is on the verge. I'm excited for that.
Nice. Yeah. Well, that's cool. David, how about you?
Well, I actually just started a new job this week, so that's kind of been interesting. I'm currently in, onboarding mode.
Congratulations.
So, yeah. So that's, honestly, that's pretty much my life right now. Other than that, I'm maybe going to go to Dragon Con at the end of the month if Georgia doesn't just convert into like one giant massive COVID virus.
Maybe.
Yeah.
The likelier thing would be if the governor decided, hey, no big events, but everything's just so fucking uncertain.
Yep.
Yeah, I'm not saying anything new. It has been this way for, 20 months now, but oh well. Sorry. Didn't mean to be a bummer.
I'm telling you, we need like laser tag. Except with dart guns filled with COVID vaccines.
Oh my gosh! Well, like, what would you be doing at Dragon Con if you went?
Just going to the various panels, stuff like that. We've got a hotel at one of the venues.
Mm-hmm.
And we'd probably be doing a lot of the sci-fi and steampunk stuff, and then we're hopefully actually going to be doing, they have a venue that's basically like, Asian pop culture. So like anything from like Bollywood to like foreign films, stuff like that.
Oh, nice.
And so we're going to be doing a martial arts demonstration for that.
Mm. Cool.
So yeah, it should be interesting. It's going to be real weird to see what it's like. They've said they're going to require masks, so...
That's good, yeah.
Yeah, it kind of annoys me that that's all a thing, because, like, a comic book convention is the one area where masks should be real easy to do.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know, and every time I've gone to one of, like, the geeky conventions that I've ever done, I've always gotten the sickest I've ever been afterwards. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. No, yeah. I mean, that is definitely a thing.
Yeah. Con crud. Well, fingers crossed that it works out for you. Hopefully things move in a better direction for everybody. I want to talk about games, because thinking about this is making me depressed.
Games.
Let's do that.
But what if I've only been playing Plague Inc?
They have that. I need to stream that. They have the they put out the scenario where you are working on developing the cure and distributing the cure for it.
Cool.
They made that toward the beginning half of the pandemic. They made it early on and distributed it. I haven't played it yet because I kind of always thought that I would stream it. I need to fast track that. So in that case, maybe
fast track it like it was a vaccine.
Yeah, like it's the mRNA. Cool. So we've got to do the regular kind of show, What with the Grind, the Multiplayer, and the End Boss, and let's get started right away with
The Grind,
where we talk about the games we've been playing over the past period of time or so. Jala, I'm going to throw to you first.
All right. So the first thing I've been playing is Chrono Trigger. I already mentioned this. I don't want to burn cast here about the things I was talking about there, but I will do a few very brief statements about this game. So I have not played it in some 20 plus years at this point. So it was fun to be able to play it and to play it on my phone. I got to say, that's great because now that I have it on my phone, it means that whenever I'm in a line or something, because it has the ability to just bookmark wherever you are. So you don't even really need to worry about save states so much. Anyway, that means I can just kind of pick it up and continue on with it and do all the various replays and stuff just whenever. You know, whenever I have some time, which is very cool. I enjoy that quite a bit. And the gameplay holds up. It's still a lot of fun to play. I don't know. And other than that, you can listen to the episode where we talk about it in more detail. The snespodcast.libsyn.com.
Yeah. What what party do you generally favor when you roll Chrono Trigger?
Here's a fun fact. With every single game where you can toggle at party members, I always evenly level everybody. So Shining Force or anything else, I always level everybody up. So it doesn't really matter. I end up with various combinations depending upon who has what levels.
Yeah. So wait, doesn't that increase your grind time exponentially?
Not in Chrono Trigger, because there's not really grinding in Chrono Trigger. No.
Yeah, technically it would only increase it linearly, where the variable is the number of players.
Yeah.
All right, nerd.
You could. I mean,
on the other hand, if you're playing something like Persona or whatever, where you had to deal with relationships between characters, then it would increase exponentially.
Yeah, like with Shining Force, for example, Shining Force 3 has a lot of the relationship aspects, so you end up going through part of the battles and then like leaving them and then coming back to them so you can kind of level up again. But I actually like that game enough that I don't care if I'm repeating battles a bunch of times. So that's like one of the few exceptions to the whole grinding thing. I just like playing the game. So.
In this case, I mean exponentially, hyperbolically, metaphorically.
Anyway, so I'm very sure there's not going to be any specific questions to that cannot already be answered by the SNES podcast episode that will be coming out. I believe it is either the same day as the level drops publicly or the day after, but I will be posting a link in my Twitter in either case and dropping it to various other locations as well. So anyway, the next game that I have played is Drongin. So Drongin is a short, procedurally generated, hand-drawn dungeon crawler developed and published by Dark Des Labs in 2019. In the game, you play a hero starting an adventure in Inkland. You are either a warrior, a mage, or a rogue. And it's hand-drawn, like I mentioned, so it is primarily black and white. There's only color added in certain places to draw your attention to certain items or enemies or chests that you find along the way. You can explore dungeons, caves, forests, towns, and there's also a mysterious tower somewhere, apparently. I have not come across said tower. I have gone to forests, caves, dungeons, and towns. I have not found the tower yet. Anyway, the object is to explore said tower, which fell out of the sky one day, and it belongs to some kind of a mage or something, and, you know, it threatens the world because it's a mage. I don't know. Yeah. I don't know why it's there. There's not really a story in this game. You just kind of...
The tower is the wizard's natural habitat.
Yes. So there's not really any real direction when you start the game. So if you aren't the type of person to explore every area, you might wander off from the first area without realizing that there's a merchant and a skill tree next to the starting point where you can spend your level up points and your currency.
Wait, so is this a literal tree?
It is a literal tree that has stuff tacked to it.
Huh. This seems appropriate.
Yes. So, yes, you have the skill tree that includes class-specific abilities and also the ability to eat items and absorb health and attributes from them. You can eat literally every item in the game you can pick up. So
this is an excellent choice. I approve of
this. Yes, it's the whole River City Ransom approach to item use.
Well, it's actually the game's central mechanic. You eat items, and you can either, you know, heal yourself by eating stuff, or you can also get attributes. Like if you eat a sword, then that will up your attack, but it will lower your like defense or something. I don't know, some other stat goes down usually, and so like you can kind of very quickly tailor your character to whatever the situation is, depending upon what kind of junk you're carrying around with you. But the starting inventory is very small, so you have to spend new skill points to expand it as soon as possible. Either that, or you're just going to like have to constantly be eating or throwing away items. Depending on
churning through it. Yeah.
But since it's procedurally generated, you have no idea what's going to show up and where and when. So, another thing to note, it's very weird when it comes to sound because there's no music and there's very few sound effects. But I don't actually find this to be an issue because like I just play it in bed when I'm trying to relax to go to sleep. So this little thing for a little bit before I go to sleep is fine. Mm-hmm. Like it's, and I usually turn down the volume anyway at that time of night. So, yeah.
Man, I love this as an example of like, if you have an idea for a video game, or if you want to make a video game, just do the damn thing.
Yeah, and this person totally did. But I can literally see
like the lines of graph paper that the person drew on when scanning the models in. Like this is fantastic.
It's great. It's I actually the hand drawn artwork is probably my favorite thing about it. It's just that's really the draw, is to go see what else you're gonna find. Like I found
it's the draw
randomly in the,
sorry. Sorry, Jella.
You were awful.
Continue.
I went through like a forest and a cave and some other stuff and came out on the other side, found a town, and then there's like a skeleton meditating and hovering above the ground that wants to tell you about the meaning of life. It's like, okay, that's cool. But anyway, it's really initially disorienting when you first pick up the game because there's no tutorial, there's no story, there's nothing. You just go around and do stuff and then slowly figure it out as you keep dying. So after you die a few times, you figure out the mechanics. And then after you survive long enough, you get to eat items. And once you get to eat items and get skills and stuff from them, then that kind of renders any other challenge inconsequential. So at that point, it becomes super easy street and you're just kind of wandering around, you know, a place that just is different every time you play.
Yeah.
Obviously, it's a budget title, but it still scratches my occasional dungeon crawler itch, and it's weird and charming enough to keep me playing for a little bit at least. I'm probably going to continue playing it until I at least figure out where the tower is once.
Pro tip, you should probably have, you know, if you have dungeon crawler itch, you should probably have that looked at.
Indeed. It's much like con crud. So anyway, exactly. I would recommend it as a decompression game on a sale for fans of the genre, but just understand the budget nature of the thing that you are purchasing for a dollar or whatever you paid for it.
I mean, it's a budget price for a budget game.
Indeed. It's fine. It's totally fine. I was not mad about picking up this game and playing it.
Hey, let games be modest. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I have to say, though, it's perverse for a game where it looks like a lot of the assets were drawn on graph paper. It's perverse to me that this has an auto mapping feature.
Yeah. Well,
that's my only comment.
Yeah. So, well, anyway, any questions about Drongin?
No, that is, by the way, I before I got the pun, I spelled it Drongeon and couldn't find anything. So that is Drawngeon, which makes way more sense than what I was initially thinking.
Yes. Drawn Dungeon. Drongin. Yeah.
Indeed.
So looks neat.
The last thing that I will mention is World's End Club. The original title was Death March Club in Japan, and that is the title that I prefer.
Yeah.
So this game, huh?
I'm curious about this. This is the one Danganronpa and Zero Escape.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so this is a puzzle action.
But younger?
Yes, this is, well, sort of, but no. It's sort of, kind of, but it, also it's a different type of game. I don't know. Let me just tell you about it. Okay, it's a puzzle action adventure.
Yep, I have all my assumptions, and I will not have those challenged.
Hybrid game by the director of Zero Escape and the creator and scenario writer of Danganronpa. I played the demo because I was curious, and then I liked it enough that Dave bought it for me for my birthday last month. So I have therefore been playing this around playing the other stuff. So it starts with a bunch of sixth graders on a bus together going somewhere on a field trip when a meteor crashes into Tokyo and ends the world. And then the kids wake up in an underwater amusement park and a jester-looking creature called Pielope that was in a movie the kids were watching on the bus suddenly appears and tells them that they're now taking part in a killing game, which was what was happening in the movie when they were on the bus.
Oh.
So it sounds like Zero Escape and Danganronpa, right?
It does.
But the game doesn't, that killing game doesn't last very long. And somehow the losers of the game who get whisked away by like robots don't end up getting killed, but rather they're just imprisoned. And the main character, who is the one who happened to win the game, happens to break them all free and then rescues everybody as they jump into a submarine and head to the surface and get away from the underwater park right as it's breaking apart. And then when they get to the surface, the sky's full of these huge flying X's that look like alien spaceships, and all the towns are overgrown and there's no people anywhere, but there's also no bodies. There's just mutated plants and animals everywhere. And kids find out that they have arrived in Kagoshima, which is about half of Japan's length away from Tokyo, where they came from. So they decide that they're going to make the trek back to Tokyo in the hope of finding other people, getting home, seeing what happened, because they don't know what's going on.
Yeah.
So while they're facing mutated creatures, the return of Pielope, and then battling cultists worshiping an AI called Mike,
It's an acronym. It's got to be an acronym, right?
Yes, it's an acronym. Anyway, excellent. And don't ask me what it is. I don't know what it is. Anyway, the kids each in turn manifest superpowers when they face a life or death crisis and they want to protect their friends. So the main character, Rachel, has big league pitcher and can throw extremely heavy objects with really, really great force and just, you know, bust things into pieces by throwing things at it. Nyoro, which is a scientist's daughter, creates walking time bombs that are basically bombs. And Mochan, a chef kid, assumes iron skin to become Iron Chef. That's the name of his power. Of course. They even have a kid, Tatsun, who is a Sentai Show-obsessed goody two-shoes kid that turns into Electro Ranger Black and uses shockwaves, so he turns into a little Sentai warrior. And it has branching paths where you can follow different, the group very commonly splits in half. And so you can follow one group or the other group depending upon your decisions at the time as you go. And there's other certain points where you can make a key decision. Sometimes that is within a certain amount of time you have to make a decision. Otherwise, one of those decisions will be taken away from you and you just get one choice left. And so you can kind of follow either one. And, I faced one game over and I'm currently learning the big plot reveals from Mike. And, other than that, like there's lots of twists and turns to the plot that some of them took me by surprise. But it is also still a kid-friendly game, and it's really cute with charming characters that, especially I like the voice acting is really good too. And like, it's super funny because, a lot of the voice actors have been in other, you know, the other games released by these same people. And so, one of my favorite voice actresses plays one of the characters in this game. And she also was playing, what's his head? I forget. Nagi? Is that his name? The guy I hated with the white hair from Donald.
Yeah, Rapa yeah. Too? Yeah, no, yeah. Yeah. Nagi.
Okay, that one. So she also played that character in that game. But as soon as that character opened his mouth in this game, I was just like, that's her, isn't it? And it was her. So
oh, no.
Happy. So anyway, as I mentioned, this is an action adventure-ish title. There mm-hmm. are action portions. Basically, as you keep progressing through the story, you have action parts, you have story parts that's just visual novel style, and then you've got camp, where you can just sit around a fire when everybody goes to just relax in the evening and go to sleep, and you can talk to everybody and kind of do like a you know, round table discussion and see how everybody's doing.
Mm-hmm.
And the action portions don't really have any real consequences because the game reloads. If you die, it reloads right to the place just before where you've died. So it goes really, really easy as a really relaxing thing to play. Again, this is a good game to play at the end of the day, or if you have kids and stuff and you like this kind of a game, you like the yeah. Danganronpa or Zero Escape, but you have kids and you don't want them to see all the blood and guts and whatever.
Upsetting sexual content.
Yeah, the upsetting sexual content and everything else that's wrong about that, you know, like not a game for kids. Well, this one's geared more towards the younger audience. So also, I would also recommend it for people who just are cool with a mostly cute and fun hiking trip across Japan with random story bombs after the world has ended.
Yeah.
But I've been enjoying it. I'm not done with it yet. I was hoping to be before I got on the show again, but so goes life. Yeah. However, I am enjoying it just fine, and I will be going back and replaying some of the parts that I didn't get to see, you know, because I picked one path and I've been going down that one path.
Yeah. So. Does it give you like a flow chart where you can yes. check the other? Perfect.
Well,
yeah.
It does give you a flow chart. I think you get access to that after you've finished it, you know, like to go back and pick which section to go to.
Yeah, that's good.
Like, actually, after I died, the one time I did die, it did let me pick where I wanted to start from. So I do know that happens.
Cool. Nice. So, yeah. Yeah, I'm happy to hear that this is good. It's one that I paid attention to on the way to being released, and then after it released, nobody talked about it.
Yeah, like, well, I mean, I can understand why people who are really into Zero Escape and Danganronpa would be kind of, I don't know, put off by this game, because this is not the degree of complexity and the kind of super serious, crazy stuff that happens in those games, mm-hmm. You know, so this is a different flavor, and it's geared to a younger audience. It's very bright, it's very colorful, and yes, the world has ended, but these kids are just kids, mm-hmm. you know, kids being kids, and you know, like that's just what it is. You spend a lot of time with the kids and how they interact with each other. They are all part of a Gambare Gumi, which is translated to English as Go Getters Club.
Okay.
And they have a theme song and they sing it multiple times. So you have to understand that's the type of game this is. It's very happy and cute for being post-apocalyptic and got some like weird, crazy story bombs that just pop in every once in a while. And then like once you know the story bits, then you're like, oh, now I see all of these other things suddenly make sense.
Yeah.
So
and that's yeah. the moment that I like from the games in, you uh-huh. know, of this pedigree, right? You know, Danganronpa and Zero Escape is when pieces start clicking together after a prolonged mm-hmm. mystery. So if it's got that, I am interested.
Yeah, it does, but definitely don't think that this is going to get you on the edge of your seat, you know, like, ooh, I'm so freaked out about what's going to happen next or whatever. I mean, you're going to sit here and go, wow, what, you know, like when some of the story stuff happens. But it's, again, this is you know, not intended for the same audience exactly, you know. Mm-hmm. So but anyway, I've been enjoying it quite a bit.
Cool. Yeah, so your games were Chrono Trigger, Drongen, and World's End Club.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, I want to leave it to Dennis and David. Did either of you have any questions about that?
No,
I don't think so.
Sounds completely bonkers.
Yeah.
Well, I have been posting lots of tweets about it, so if you want to see what it looks like, I have lots of it on my Twitter.
And did you say how you're playing this? Are you playing it on Apple Arcade or some other way?
I am playing it on my Switch. So.
Okay. Well, for anyone interested, it is on Apple Arcade.
Oh, wow.
easy to find.
Cool. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'll do mine because it's basically nothing. I've been busy catching up to and then trying to get ahead on assignment play. Surprise, surprise. But what I have dipped into is the new Picross game, Picross S Genesis, Genesis and Master System. It is exactly the same as playing Picross, but the thing that you make when you punch in all of the dots on the grid maybe sometimes kind of looks like a sprite from a Sega Genesis game.
Wow, you're really selling this.
Well, all you need to hear is, hey, do you want more Picross? And then if that answer is yes, hey, here's some more Picross. It's good. It's on the Switch. It's made by the same people who made all the other good Picross games on the Switch. Also going back to like time immemorial. So slop it up, piggies. Like, you can't stop yourself from playing this.
I'm afraid to ask, but like, is the assumption that they just have an algorithm that they put a JPEG into and it turns it into a Picross puzzle? Like, is any of this authored anymore, or is it all?
I would believe that it is authored, because there, while there are 500 puzzles in each game, which is quite a bit, you can tell when you get to one that has like a particular trick. So they're all, they're authored in the way that, like, I'm positive that there is an algorithm that can generate a good Sudoku, but like,
sure, yeah,
there are some Sudokus that are like designed and made to be better than other Sudokus, right?
They have style.
Yeah, or like different tricks to them, and those tricks that an individual Picross puzzle will use, they add up and add on to each other in a way that is separate than just making the grid bigger or, just like a little bit more complex, things like that. So I would say, maybe they're starting with an image and then working backward to describe it. But I think that there is a certain artistry to putting together an image that will come out to clues that would be satisfying to work through.
Nice.
Yeah. So not that this matters, because I just play this while listening to Bob's Burgers episodes in bed, but this does have Sega Genesis music on it as well, which, good Genesis games have good music by and large, and so that is there for you as well. But yeah, if you want to solve a fun little logic puzzle and maybe see a Sonic head, then boy, have I got the game for you.
No, the Sonic head is on Trump's social media app.
Yes. No, that's now an ISIS hangout. Like, that's a...
Oh, no.
Yeah. Now ISIS has taken it over.
Don't know what I expected.
Zing. Oh, man. But yeah, that's what I had. Picross S Genesis. It's on the Switch. And boy, is it Picross. And if you like Picross, that should be enough.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think you were trying to get the maximum number of repetitions of the word Picross,
yeah,
to see if my eyes would glaze over again.
I know that's one that you get the jamais vu from. Yeah,
I mean, to be fair, this is a game for people like Romeo and Juliet, Picross lovers.
Come on, no. No, it'd be jamais entendu. Yeah. Anyway. Yeah, so let's see here. I need to look at the notes and see. Dennis, how about you?
Yeah. I have cracked into a new game called Jupiter Hell.
That looked interesting.
Yeah. I saw somebody on my Steam list playing this, and I checked it out. It's curious. It's a turn-based shooter, right?
Turn-based shooter. It is a roguelike that is actually like Rogue.
Okay.
If that makes sense. So, Heresy. Put it on the grid, turn-based, procedurally generated. It kind of like it is an old school roguelike, if that helps you conceptualize it. But it is ranged combat focused. in that, you know, you're kind of sticking to walls and staying behind cover and attacking enemies from afar as they either do the same or try to rush up on you. And then, yeah, the big thing about it is that it is skinned as a Doom-inspired game. To the point that I think they name-checked Doom very specifically in their Kickstarter and then had to back way the hell off of that.
Because
they were sitting a little too close for the brand manager's comfort.
It was getting to be actionable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But the game has not lost anything in their little sidestep away from a lawsuit.
Yeah.
It is still a Doom as hell Doom game. And carries all of the swagger and heavy metal and attitude of a Doom game, which is really funny to say about a turn-based for all intents and purposes puzzle game.
Yeah, I mean, like, Doom is ultimately a kind of slow game. Like, mm-hmm. there are parts of it that are fast, but, like, you know, a lot of what sells Doom being Doom is the aesthetic, and you can mimic that and ape it and still get it stuff across. So I'm not necessarily surprised to hear that it carries.
Yeah, and it turns out it carries extremely well. The feel of kind of like, oh shit, I've sprung a room of monsters and here we go. I played the Doom 2016 reboot fairly recently, and it echoes with this game very, very well. Like, that feel is very much intact, even if it is in a completely different genre of game. Like I said, I think this was originally a Kickstarter, and it's been in like early access for a good long time. But I came to it at the 1.0 full launch. That said, it still is rough around the edges in a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure what of it is the, hey, we're an old school roguelike feel versus what is just stuff that needs to get polished up.
Mm-hmm.
So for example, like your tree of skills is literally just a list of skills. And every skill later in the list has prerequisites from earlier on the list, but the only way you can see that is to scroll down to the skill.
It's like Fallout, it doesn't show you the dependencies.
Exactly. And so, you know, early on you do a bunch of bouncing back and forth to kind of look at what everything is going to have to, or how everything is going to have to line up. And then once you kind of figure out the lane you want to pick, it's a little smoother because you know the three or four skills that you're going to be pouring points into. And they actually recommend in the tutorial, they're like, go look at the tier, you know, whatever, four or five skills, the final skills. You're only allowed to have one from the top tier. And so, you know, we recommend you kind of pick one of those and then rush that in terms of picking other skills, which is what I did. And again, that kind of sets in stone a little bit the skills you're going to be choosing until you reach that. But I think, you know, you reach that at level 8. I'm now level 12, I think. And I'm about, well, I don't know how far I am through the game. I would guess I'm about halfway to 2/3 through the game.
Okay.
So, you know, you do get some flexibility to play around with other skills, but, you know, the early on, it's going to be on rails. But yeah, the core loop of this game is you spawn into a dungeon, and just every time you move, then the world moves around you, then you move and the world moves around you. And you're just trying to explore and find the exit is all you have to do. But really what you want to be doing is clearing all the enemies, finding all the crates, because those are going to have equipment and healing items and ammo, which is of particular note for me. I'll get into that in a second. But you kind of want to full clear each floor as you go through. They offered a bunch of different difficulty levels. I think there's 5 different difficulty levels. I started on the easiest, and it actually feels fairly easy. So go figure on that, right? But for a roguelike, I could see them very easily skewing too difficult.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, so, you know, I haven't run into too much trouble. When you see enemies, I mentioned if you are next to a wall or if there's some kind of barrier between you and them, there are levels of cover that you'll get that affect your chance to hit. And everything, once an enemy appears on the screen, is this delicate balance of, all right, is it worth it for me to waste the two turns getting to cover, or should I just stand and bang? And do I think that taking this person out quicker from less cover is going to ultimately save me more health?
Right.
And the answer to that is never really straightforward, especially because oftentimes when you see one enemy, there's likely more around the corner.
Yeah.
And that formula has carried the game very well for, I think, three different worlds I've gone through now. In a very Doom style, you are like a space marine who, coming back to his space station orbiting Jupiter, gets shot at. You know, you get there all angry at, like, hey, why did you guys shoot at me? But everyone's been turned into a zombie. And you go there, or from there, and then to the various moons around Jupiter, trying to figure out what the hell is going on. Literally, the hell is going on.
Right.
Yeah, so it's been a lot of fun. The loadouts that I've gotten have been really, really interesting. So there's different tiers of weapons that you can find. With the highest tier, we'll have kind of unique properties, almost Borderlands style. Mm-hmm. So right now, the combination of, like, equipment and then skill tree I'm working with, I have an SMG that fires in 11 round bursts per round, which is really, really high. Like, normal SMGs would do like 5. Mm-hmm. Fires in 11 round bursts, and it converts any status effects you have on you into crit potential. So, like, if you're burning, or there's a status effect called pain or what have you, like, if you've got those, you also have a higher percent chance to crit. You then,
so can you set yourself on fire?
I have not tried standing next to an explosive barrel and shooting it. But I imagine that would be the way to do it if you wanted to. I don't think that would wind up being net positive to me. but we'll see. We'll see if it happens at some point. The next gun I have is a pistol that makes enemies explode when I kill them. And then I have the dual wielding trait, where I can hold both an SMG and a pistol out at once and fire both at the same time. I also have a gunslinger trait that fires twice when I take my turn. And so between this insanely high capacity SMG and this explosion pistol, basically I've yet to meet an enemy that in one round I can't just burn down and make explode, which is great. Problem is, I burn through ammo like a mother.
You lay out, like, so much. You lay out so many bullets that you die of lead poisoning by breathing it. Yeah.
Exactly. Like, I'm constantly searching for ammo, and I actually started specifically taking skills from the skill tree that, when I first saw, I was like, oh, get an extra ammo drop. That's so dumb. Like, why would I ever do that at the beginning when I was browsing through? And then I'm like, okay, where's that skill? I need my bullet fix. So I've taken points in that I just assumed was going to be useless. But I also have a nail gun, which uses multi-tools for ammo instead of bullets. And multi-tools are like your you use it to hack computers or upgrade things. And it's kind of a separate resource. And they're a fairly scarce resource. So, like, you know, I maybe have 3 or so on hand. But one multi-tool loads 99 nails into this gun. And as long as you don't reload, you don't use another multi-tool. But the nail gun also causes enemies to leave a cloud of poison gas when they die. And you don't need to have that gun out to have that effect. And so I mostly keep that in my back pocket so that enemies get rained down with bullets, explode, and leave a cloud of poison gas. This game is real fun, guys.
Yeah,
that's a good time.
These synergies sound bonkers. This looks really good.
Other fun items, I have what's called the Fiend Crown. And the little, like, goblin enemies from Doom are called fiends. And now I've upgraded that crown so that it just automatically converts them to my team. Like, anytime a fiend comes on screen, they immediately turn into an ally. Initially, it started that they just would ignore me. And now I've worn it long enough that they turn into allies, which, as I mentioned, when there's one enemy, there's usually more. And sometimes they're of different types. So I will, you know, accidentally happen upon a group And, you know, two members of that group will immediately turn on the other two. And I just kind of go hide in a room and press the wait button to pass turns while they fight each other. Hmm. Fantastic. A lot of fun.
Nice.
Now, I forget. This is kind of off topic, but did the original Doom have monster combat?
Say more about, like, the, like they would fight each other?
Yeah, like, I forget. It seemed like I remember if you could get the enemies to accidentally hit each other, they'd then turn on each other.
Yeah, yeah, they did.
Yes. And that was a very essential part of the pacifist runs that people would do.
Okay.
Like the speed running, the videos on it are incredible because there's like these record or levels that were considered impossible. They would never be done. And like in the past couple of years, there's several of them that have fallen either to tool assisted runs or actual speed runs. And it's just the technicality that goes into that is awe inspiring.
Nice.
Yeah. So super fun game, scratching the roguelike itch. It is. It has a very pretty kind of visual aesthetic. It's very Doom. However, you know, the game, you could almost play it exclusively looking at the minimap. It's very simple in that right. And in the rough around the edges kind of area, when you have multiple enemies on screen at once, you will automatically target one of them, and then you can manually switch between them, but I have not seen any kind of button to automatically rotate through enemies, which means it's very easy to lose track of one, especially if it's like a dark shadowy area and they're in cover. You'll finish the fight and then be like, why am I still getting hit? What is going on here? And you know, you kind of are surprised that there's more people in the room than you thought. That doesn't feel intentional. It feels like something they could iron out or have like some kind of highlight on enemies that you are not targeting. Because sometimes the order of operations of like who to shoot first is very important.
Yeah.
And so to have that, you know, have confusion on who is available to shoot, you know, on what problem you are solving is a little bit frustrating sometimes. There's, you know, there's a couple other things like that. The final thing I'll say is this game has the most aggressive inventory full barks that I have ever heard.
Aggressive how?
Literally, and pardon the French, but the first time that I tried to pick something up with my inventory full, I nearly jumped out of my skin. It was like you said, a quiet, kind of slower section of the game. And then suddenly, no fucking room!
Oh, God.
It's like, oh, my God. Why? What is going on?
You seem angrier about like having your pockets full than you do about being shot by a demon.
That is absolutely the case. Like this person does not like being weighed down. Like you are an elite killing machine. You are not a Roomba. Damn it.
The thing about soldiers is they're trained to carry a bunch of stuff. Like at most times.
You would think. And it took a while for me to fill it up. So, you know, maybe he's just, it's the straw that broke the camel's back or something.
Maybe. But
yeah, I had to laugh because the jumps in this game have all come from that happening where I've had to pick something up with my inventory full and gotten yelled at.
Wow.
Because like, you know, you're fighting monsters, you expect stuff to be loud. You're cleaning up afterwards, you do not. So that is a little thing to be aware of if you're prone to jump scares.
Yeah. Okay. Can you turn that off or down?
You know, I mentioned it in the Discord just as a goof, and someone mentioned something about the serious mode, or like those go in the serious lines for, or those aren't in the serious lines for a reason or something like that. Oh. I have not gone and explored what the hell that meant. Like I wasn't going to press on that, but the way they reacted made it sound like, oh yeah, those are goofs that you can avoid if you want.
Oh, okay.
But I mean, do you really want to play serious mode in a game about blowing up zombies and demons
in space?
Yeah.
No. It's despite having jump scares from it, I am amused by it. Now on my 40th run, we'll see.
Yeah.
But yeah, from what I read, runs take about 4 hours, and I would like that to be a little bit shorter. But you can save, so you know. It's not Returnal.
Is there any permanent progression if you fail a run?
No, I think it is a old school roguelike in that way, where every run is kind of starting from the same scratch. Now you can choose your difficulty level. And so if easy starts feeling, easy, you can start bumping it up. But that, I think, between difficulty levels, there's no permanent upgrades between runs.
Okay.
So yeah, that's what I've been playing. I found a random article about it and decided to take the plunge, and has been a lot of fun.
Nice. No, I mean, you've sold me. Yeah, I can't. I'm not going to get it because I won't be playing it. But it sounds like one to pay attention to. You know,
yeah, I would stream if trying to stream anything doesn't crash my computer.
Yeah, it's important. You need a computer to do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I looked into streaming cards, and then I was like, at this stage of my life, I will find myself frustrated by interruptions more so than enjoying the act of streaming.
Yeah.
So I'm just not even going to introduce the thing that would make the interruptions frustrating.
Yeah.
I'll get back to it at some point, I'm sure.
Cool.
But yeah, that's Jupiter Hell.
Jupiter Hell. I dig it.
Mm-hmm.
That all you got?
That is all. A little more on my standbys here and there, but nothing to report.
Cool. David, how about you?
Sure. So I've not been doing a whole lot with the whole, new job thing, but I have been playing around with a Game Pass game called Mother Gunship.
Mother Gunship?
Oh, yes. This was on Epic as well.
Yeah. So it's kind of a silly game. It's basically, now that you mentioned it was an Epic game, not a Game Pass game.
Okay.
So it's kind of a silly game. It's a roguelike bullet hell first person shooter with probably its most unique feature being that instead of collecting loot and stuff like that, you're collecting gun parts.
Okay.
So you either have barrels, which actually do the shooting, obviously, connectors, which have different slots to hook things into Lego style, or caps, which basically just alter the stats of the gun. But the thing is, you're very much encouraged to put these together just crazy style so that you'll have a gun with, two chainsaw barrels and a rocket launcher barrel or something. And, each of these have, damage, fire rate, multi-attack, some of them the shots bounce, different ranges. I think my favorite gun I've built so far is I happen to have a lot of the caps or guns have modifiers that are either knock back or knock forward. So, okay. Either make it so if you're jumping while you fire, it'll propel you backwards or will propel you forward.
Okay.
And I basically put on a whole bunch of high level propel you forward things and basically became like Superman.
Okay.
Just like as I fired, I would just go flying forward. So, I'd do strafing runs on enemies, basically.
That's great.
The other thing with this is over the course of the each level, you collect power-ups that are like bonuses to maximum health, maximum damage, or not damage, maximum ammunition, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And one of them is increases to the number of jumps you can do.
Okay.
So you start out being able to do a triple jump. And it's not uncommon by the end of the level to be able to do, 20 jumps in the air.
why ever land?
Exactly. I mean, I feel like this is a question that more games should ask themselves.
What is land, really?
Exactly.
This air that forgot what it was.
The other kind of interesting thing is the storyline for what it is. Basically, the plot line is that these archivist aliens have come and are taking apart Earth to, you know, to catalog the data and just kind of wrecking up the place. And they've mostly destroyed Earth, and you're a member of the Resistance. And the aliens have a mother gunship that all the other spaceships, you know, I guess come from. And so you're having to work your way through the various other ships and, you know, get to their main control and hit the self-destruct button so that you can work your way up to the mother gunship.
Okay.
But the whole thing is just completely ridiculous. Just tons and tons of, you know, fourth wall breaking and kind of, you know, meta jokes. It's, you know, extremely established that, you know, as you're working your way through the rooms and the levels, you'll have things that are like challenge rooms and, you know, random modifier rooms and, for example, boss rooms, you know going in. And that's all established to be in world. The characters, your commander will speculate on why do they warn you before you fight the boss.
Yeah.
And like a running joke is none of the characters can actually figure out how it is that that humanity is losing this war.
Okay.
Because the aliens don't appear to be particularly competent.
Right.
Yeah, so, I mean, there's just stuff like that. Also, like I said, every level, you end it by finding the ship's self-destruct button, hitting it, and just jumping in an escape pod. And so a recurring joke is the fact that, like, oh, yeah, so we're taking out this ship, you know, because it has the shield generator for the mother gunships. We have to take that out first. Man, you know, it's probably a marvel of science. It would be really cool if you, you know, to see, but we don't have time for that. We're just going to do the self-destruct. So just, you know, it's a game. You have to be very tolerant of that sort of silly kind of meta humor if you're going to like the game, but if you do, it's, you know, fairly endearing.
Hmm.
But yeah, that's literally all I've been playing. It's
how dependent is a good run on like breaking the game? Is it, you know, any run managed well can be successful, or is it like you really need a disgusting combination to actually get out of this alive?
I'd say more the former. You know, you can. It sort of depends. So it has like the Doom style thing where there will be like random walls that actually aren't real walls. And if you walk up to them, you know, you can get power up. Hmm. And if you, you know, either slot the thing that like makes you able to see any of these walls within however many feet, or if you just check all of the walls, that makes things a lot easier. So it kind of varies. It's not nearly to the degree that like an Isaac thing is, but at the same time, having the right weapons definitely can make a difference.
Yeah.
You also, all of the items you find at the end of the level, you keep, and then you can take usually up to like 4 of them with you when starting a level. And so that gives you a significant ability to kind of put your thumb on the scale.
Okay.
Nice.
Yeah.
Hmm. So the fact that this is Bullet Hell, I think of Bullet Hell, I think of, you know, the top-down view because, you know, it's about discerning safe areas from danger areas in the pattern. Is being locked into a first-person view like at odds with the amount of stuff that they're throwing at you? Is there like is there anything they do to give you some awareness, or is it just you're dodging and you're dodging?
Kind of more the second. So bullet hell isn't a genre that I'm like, you know, have played a lot of. And so I know a lot of the reviews to this game, you know, I think generally fairly positive, but usually the criticism was that the bullet hell aspects didn't feel as, I don't know, tight or whatever as they should have.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not sure that I'm, you know, kind of savvy enough on the genre to really know the difference.
Yeah.
It does. For me, it tends to be a lot more of a, you know, keep moving and kind of, you know, manage the enemies type of a thing more than, you know, like a 2D bullet hell where it's just very intricate, like, you know, dodging around patterns, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah.
So I would say in some ways it probably feels more like a Doom. You know, like a Doom 2016 type of thing where it's bullet hell in that there's lots of things shooting at you, but it's not things where like, oh, this particular enemy shoots out like expanding rings of shots. And so you have to like, you know, back up in order to, you know, get around them as they spread out. Or, you know, it's not that type of bullet hell.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, no, this looks neat. The gun design, again, those awesome synergies. I like when stuff collides and makes broken things happen.
Yep, yep.
Did you have anything besides Mother Gunship?
Nope, that's all I got.
All right.
Multiplayer.
Now it is time for the multiplayer, where we ask you a question and then you answer it. Dennis, what is the question that you ask the nice people?
Yeah, sometimes there's just superfluous elements to a game. So I asked, what game mechanic or system feels completely bolted on to the main game? And would you remove or change it if you could?
Yeah. And we got a lot of responses, so I'm going to get us started here with Eli, who says, here's a hot one. Stealth in Sekiro. It's nothing! That's not stealth! You run up behind or jump down behind someone and hit attack, along with being very bare bones. Which I can deal with, it tends to give players an inaccurate idea of what the game actually is. Yeah, you see, it's a stealth game made by the same people who did Tenchu, or the later Tenchu games. Maybe? No, it's a game about dueling people. It's a game, mm-hmm. It's a game about one-on-one fights with enemies of various sizes. Yeah, no, 100% agreed on that, Eli.
I remember Splinter Cell talked about its style as active stealth.
Yeah.
That you're sneaking, but you're still killing everyone.
Of course.
And I feel like active stealth has expanded to sometimes they don't notice you before they die. That counts as stealth.
Yeah.
Which is technically true, but not what I'm thinking when I say a stealth game.
Jala, what does Greg say?
Greg says, I think hacking in Mass Effect 1 and 2 was terrible. One, the system for doing it wasn't fun compared to the ones that the Fallout and Elder Scrolls games used. Two, it seemed questionable at best. The future would make hacking easier, no? And was there just to add some complexity. And three, it felt totally out of place in a shooter, albeit one with RPG aspects. Thank God BioWare came to their senses and removed it from Mass Effect 3. And that one, you just wait a few seconds while your amp hacks the door for you, which just seems right.
Yeah. No, it is very strange going back to Mass Effect 1 when they thought that the game was an RPG. Yeah. I swear I didn't do this intentionally. David, what does David say?
David says, crafting systems in most open-world RPGs, like The Witcher 3. You never need to craft weapons because you find new ones every 5 minutes, and bombs and oils replenish automatically. I don't know who is demanding that all these games have crafting, but it usually feels tacked on.
Yeah. No.
100%.
In Witcher 3, it might as well just be like a quest that says, hey, go kill these things and bring me these pieces so I can make your Mastercraft armor. And that's all. Because, like, you know, you sure loot a lot of like torn leather straps for a game where you're really not going to be like making leather armor for yourself. It's very extraneous.
Does Witcher 3 at least have like the whole alchemy system where you have to have booze in order to refill things?
Yeah, it does.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's what I was going to say is these crafting systems are always way too elaborate and way too expansive, but there will be one piece of it that is actually incredibly important.
Mm-hmm.
Unless you're doing research in advance, you don't know what that is. You just like, I guess I need to save everything. I better be prepared to make a ton of potions or a ton of armor or a ton of, you know, whatever the menu says I can make. And really it's just one or two items that you're actually going to need to craft.
That was such a problem for me in Horizon. Was like, I don't know which bitter bob I need to maybe craft a bag size increase. Yeah, it was a whole thing.
Better hang on to this goose fat.
I think my favorite take on that, though, is did any of you guys play Children of... Not Children of Morta. Path of Exile?
No.
In that one, literally the vendor system is crafting. So there's no money. It's all barter. So it's like, oh, I can sell, like, for example, you sell most of your equipment for town portal scrolls.
Okay.
And then trade those when you actually want to buy things.
Oh, so it turns into its own currency. Weird.
Yeah, so like literally everything is like 50% or you know, quarter currency, 50% usable item, and quarter like crafting material.
Wow. Yeah, that's too much.
I started trying to play that game and I just did not get very far.
Dennis, what does Ollie say?
Ollie says Gwent. You know what people always say, that gigantic open world RPG really needs a tacked on card game for immersion and to pad out the paltry 130 hours of existing gameplay.
There are people who will fight you about that.
Yeah,
will. I'm not one of them.
They made a standalone card game and it didn't work.
Yeah. They changed stuff about Gwent, like the people who like Gwent in Witcher 3, they did not care for the standalone version of it. So I am led to believe that there are changes that they made. I was not a Gwent fan, so I could take or leave it. It's neat that they're like that. This is like a thing in the world that people play in there, you know, like in the world of The Witcher. But yeah, playing itself is not for me. I can't get on board with this next one, though. Austin says, oh, God, any card or pub game in RPGs, like the card game in Final Fantasy IX, the pub games in Fable, Gwent in Witcher. I know they're all optional, but man, it hurts when I get that itch for 100% and I have 90 billion hours of games to games to go through. Yeah, I mean, so if I got the 100% itch, that would be a problem. So that's just not part of my psychographic. FF9's card game sucks, but like, I don't know. The card game in Final Fantasy VIII is one of the main draws of that game. Maybe I'm just listing it as an exception. But like, I like gambling in Fallout New Vegas and in Red Dead and stuff like that. So maybe
I'm going to channel my inner Ben and bring up Sabacc and KOTOR.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
Good stuff.
Yeah.
I think we now know if we ever want to torture Austin, we just need to send him copies of Yakuza.
Yeah, let's see. Jala, what does Callum say?
Callum says, the loot box system in Horizon Zero Dawn. I love that game, but loot boxes are dumb and even more dumb in a single player game.
Hallelujah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What do they even have in them?
Just random stuff. Just let's build a gambling system into our game, you know.
Here's the reason that you love them. It's because the limited inventory was so restrictive that being able to leave a bunch of loot boxes unopened was like a stealth way to expand your inventory.
Yeah, the way that you do that is to fix the inventory system.
Yeah.
not put a slot machine into my single player game.
Yeah, that was dumb. Did they even ever try to like sell loot boxes? I don't think they did.
No, I would have heard about that. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Just because I would have felt my, role on this podcast is to troll Cole, I'd like to point out that you just got done defending gambling and games.
I did, but like gambling and games, like when I say like playing the gambling in New Vegas, like the caravan game in that is really fun. Like I enjoyed, you know, like playing like the Texas Hold'em in there, like literally just the like a slot machine, you know, while all of that is gambling, a slot machine is far less engaging to me because there's no input, right? It's just open and see what the payout is. So that's how I square that contradiction. Let's see, David, what does Rookie say?
Rookie says resource gathering in the Mass Effect games is either tedious, scanning planets, janky, that damn Mako. Why am I gathering resources? This isn't StarCraft, it's an RPG / third-person shooter. I just need to talk to any aliens, shoot them, occasionally punch a reporter when I mean to say something mean, and dabble in light genocide.
Yeah, yeah. No, Mass Effect's getting a beating today. Dennis, what does Sean say?
Sean says the god-awful minigames in Mary Jane section in Spider-Man felt like complete filler, and Miles Morales was much more refined and a better game for it.
Hmm.
I like to imagine that the Mary Jane section is Spider-Man just getting high and then trying to web swing.
You don't think he's earned that?
Yeah. That's like driving drunk in GTA 4 and onward.
Oh, God. And I'll round us out here with Dave, who says, card game systems in Final Fantasy and The Witcher hold little appeal to me, and while they're optional, I think I'd rather see them removed and that effort folded back into the general game. Especially when card games such as Gwent ended up being created as their own individual downloadable game.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Good response. I disagree on the Final Fantasy one, but Gwent, I can agree with you with. It's almost like there are exceptions, and it's weird. Yeah, and it's weird for me to point that out because it goes without saying. Yeah,
I feel so bad for Final Fantasy VIII that I feel like all anyone remembers of it is it's the one after VII, card games and Gunblades.
Yeah. I mean, I like FF8, but I'm not going to say that Triple Triad isn't a big part of it. Primarily because it's tied into other systems. That's what's important about it, you know, about any of these things. If they're tied into other stuff, you know, they become less optional, but they become much more rewarding to engage with, as opposed to being part of the just kind of something that you do for intrinsic reward.
Mm-hmm.
Which is not going to work for everybody. I'll do one here that just because it's top of mind because we recently played it. Paradise Killer, I generally enjoy. I do not think that game needed a pickup economy. I don't think that you needed to like pick up money and use that to like buy little doodads in the world. I thought that was not a good way for them to encourage exploration. It was kind of a net negative.
Hmm.
Yeah. Jella.
So, other than saying generally, don't give me things I have to collect dongles a certain number of for any reason ever. But the other thing, and that's like a general because that applies to so many games.
Yeah.
But the other thing would be something like the needless padding of the mini games in Danganronpa Trials that have nothing to do with the events transpiring or how you approach. Like some of them I can see how that kind of plays into like, okay, this is the inner workings of the mime. Some of them like the racing game and stuff like what is the point of this other than to just extend the game a little bit? This is nonsense. Mm. I'd rather they do it Ace Attorney style and just like move on with life.
Agreed.
But...
Yeah, no disagreement there. Those mini games, the more distance you get from them, the more ridiculous they are. Yeah. Mm-hmm. David, how about you?
I'd say driving in Saints Row 4. And the, in particular, the fact that it's got an extremely sophisticated, or well, pretty sophisticated car customization system, and, you know, throughout the game gives you progressively more over-the-top vehicles that you're never going to use.
Mm-hmm. That you can just, it's cool that you can summon them in whenever and wherever you want to, but, you know, it's still not gonna, it's like them having cars you can ride and crack down. Like, no, that's not what I'm here for.
Yeah.
No.
I feel like a related thing is just in general, anytime open world games give you, like, for example, like money in GTA, where it's like, this is a game about stealing things. Why are you giving me money?
Mm-hmm.
So
you have to know how much you stole in some way.
True.
Yeah. Let's see here. Dennis, how about you?
Yeah, I used it in the picture, but I never understood the gummy ship in Kingdom Hearts.
Yeah, that's a good one.
So, and there are people who will fight you too.
History to that.
Okay.
Oh yeah.
So the Japanese version actually included like a fully fleshed out like side missions and stuff like that with the gummy ship.
Mm-hmm.
And just when it got ported to the US, they, I guess, just decided Americans wouldn't be into that.
Huh.
So that's why, I mean, it's still probably the worst part of the game, but that's why there's a entire mechanic built around what's effectively a loading screen.
Huh.
Yeah, it is. It's just odd. And it's like, you know, the Lego block building feels like one of the programmers was like, I got a cool idea and I'm doing it. And everyone's like, you, why? And he's like, I'm doing it. And so it's in the game.
Do we know if that came back in the sequels, or did they kind of relegate that to just first entry weirdness?
It's in the second one.
I only played the first one, so yeah. I don't know.
Yeah. I believe it's in the second one. I don't know about the third.
Okay. Yeah. Well, good question. Thank you, everybody, for writing in and for responding. If you would like to participate, you can go to Patreon, or not Patreon, you can go to facebook.com/TheLevelPodcast and watch for the prompts to go up on Monday afternoons.
I mean, you can go to Patreon.
You can. That's just not here.
We're not gonna stop you.
For additional context, we recorded for 4 hours about Chrono Trigger earlier today.
Ooh.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I'm a little fried from being on and paying attention, but we're almost through.
The end boss.
Now it is time for the end boss, where we talk about things that are happening in the world of video games that are exciting to us. Jala, what's happening with some AI?
So, SentaAI.gg has created a desktop client that presents you with information it thinks can help you during your game, provides post-game analysis on your strategies, and provides in-game audio cues for things you might not be good at tracking yet. This is for things like League of Legends, Valorant, and Teamfight Tactics. So it'll give you cues like, hey, you should heal your teammate because they are low on health, or tells you to reload, or hey, this much time until the game ending bomb called the spike explodes.
It's like having Twitch chat.
Yeah, well, it's basically pretty much, because it's like the company's founder is basically quite aware of the difference between something like a game aid versus like a cheat tool. And so they are very specifically not having this app take any action for a player, only trigger cues that are run off of what is available on your screen only. It's not trying to do anything hidden within the running process that's going on in the background. So you can kind of think of this as a good player standing over your shoulder, telling you some stuff helpfully, or Twitch people in your chat telling you things while you're playing the game.
Yeah.
And the base app is free with plans to offer advanced features for a couple of bucks per month. But I thought that was pretty neat, because this is basically, you know, a way for you to kind of learn how to get better at those team-based games without having to just pour all of your time into it and try to become a big pro, but also without actually using like a cheat bot or something. So.
Yeah. No, so something that like trains you to know what to look for and what to do reflexively. Yeah. That sounds like it's filling in a gap quite nicely.
I beta tested this and it took about 20 minutes before the thing just started saying, screw it, you're trash.
Did you actually beta test this?
No.
Okay. I don't know. It sounds.
Yeah. Machine. Yeah, that would be cool if I could. Like, it's a very cool idea. I think it'd be very interesting to see the limitations of how much more information can be helpful. Mm-hmm. Or maybe said another way, better packaged information. Because, like, you know, your teammates' health bars are always visible in League of Legends. So it's something to call attention to the one that's getting low when you're the healer. Might be helpful, might not. There's already so much going on in that game that I don't know if more layers of information will be successful. Was there anything in the article about the like results from this or how people have improved?
Mm-mm. It didn't talk about that. All it was talking about basically was, hey, this thing exists and it's not a cheat bot, more or less.
Nice.
If you have to say it, though...
I'm sure people will grouse about it no matter what. Even if they don't say, oh, hacks, they'll say, oh, they made a beep when you should have done something and you did it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Try hard.
I just want to be good at the game I play, guy.
Yeah. You listen hard.
Neat. I've got one real quick. Coming in 2022, we've got another retro mini system. Not the N64, not anything most people, at least here stateside, have played, but it is going to be a miniature Amiga 500. I have some affection for this. While Amiga had more purchase over in Great Britain, just like like a lot of microcomputers did, had a neighbor lived at the end of my house who had this computer. It's like a big keyboard that you stick floppy disks into and it loads up cool games. And this mini console will come with 25 Amiga games on it. Some of the famous ones like Another World, Simon the Sorcerer, but you can also like sideload things onto it. And it comes with the mouse and controller that you would need to play it. This looks cool to me, although I would probably wait for the price to come down a little bit. Because it's launching at 140. This was cool to me primarily because though Amiga games are available on archive.org, many of them are available on archive.org, the web emulator has not been especially stable for me. And downloadable emulators have been a bit of a bummer. So like a dedicated box that can just run these ROMs if you plug a USB stick into it. Sounds good and fun to me. These are the same people who made the Commodore 64 Mini, which was good. It's a good Mini, and I trust these folks to do it.
Cool.
Super cool.
Would
you ever leave this hooked up as an actual keyboard at one point?
No, this is the disappointing thing. That keyboard is fake. Just like the keyboard on the Commodore 64 one is fake. Yeah. I was disappointed. I thought it was going to be an itsy bitsy keyboard. David, did it sound like you were going to say something?
Is the Amiga, is that what La Mulana is trying to emulate or whatever? Is that that one?
Yeah. Okay. Actually, I mean, La Mulana might be doing C64 stuff. It just depends. Let me double check because I have a version of La Mulana in my head. Images. Yeah, that's an Amiga style.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
Dennis, what's going on in the world of films?
Yeah. So another voice actor has been announced for the new Sonic movie, voicing Knuckles, and they went with the obvious choice, Idris Elba. Insert record scratch here.
Yeah. So who is this?
Yeah, see, I was talking to some friends about this earlier, and I was like, what is Gary and Cole's big hatred for Knuckles anyway. I don't actually know if you're just doing a bit or if you actually really don't like Knuckles. Like,
I don't. I liked Knuckles a lot more when I was younger. Because like it's actually fun to play him in the 2D games like that. Yeah. The climbing and the gliding is good.
The gliding is great.
Yeah, yeah. But just like as a character, it's really hard for me to like decouple him from the depiction in the Sonic comics, which I read an awful lot of. And it was like, all right, well, what if Sonic was generally pleasant, but was impatient and had an attitude? And Knuckles is, what if Knuckles was generally unpleasant and had an impatient and had an attitude?
Well, that's exciting.
Because he was bad guy.
I don't remember. I did never read the comics.
So. Yeah, yeah. And that characterization kind of carried forward into the 3D games, which I don't generally have a lot of affection for anyway. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, yeah, and Knuckles in my mind occupies much the same place, which it is, you know, 90s sneer cool played out to its comical conclusion.
Yeah,
that is sometimes just painful to watch, and I for the life of me I can't imagine Idris Elba, the gunslinger, doing
his most famous role, Roland. Oh, man. from that very good. David asked who Idris Elba is. Good actor. Has been in a ton of stuff. He was, I saw him first as Stringer Bell in The Wire. He also was, he played, who in Thor? Who did he play?
Heimdall.
Heimdall, yeah.
Heimdall. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Which, that's a character who's like, never speaks, so.
No, he is really good, and kind of generally, whenever people talk about like who should be cast as what, it's almost like a meme at this point. Like, oh, Idris Elba would be good at that.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. The main thing that I think of with him was the amount of time he was rumored to be the next Bond.
Yes. And boy, did that make my racist family members unhappy. Yeah.
I was excited for it because he's a badass.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I guess like I would be a lot more salty about this and a lot more like, look at these jerks. But also like the first Sonic movie was surprisingly good. Yeah. And Jim Carrey as Dr. Robotnik was freaking amazing. And you know, it was a much more slapstick version of Robotnik than I know, but I never really followed the cartoons or comics very closely. So maybe that was more expected for someone who did that. But like they have earned themselves enough goodwill in the first movie for me to be like, all right, like if this is Idris dropping in and just having a ball of a time, like it's him and Jim Carrey, Knuckles in the movie is going to be like Robotnik's sidekick.
Yeah.
This could be fantastic. It could be amazing. Mm-hmm. I cannot wait to hear what voice he is doing. Like I need to hear it.
Yeah. No,
I will not be able to rest easy until I see if he's going like over the top voice or if he's just doing Idris.
Yeah. I saw this and I was like, oh yeah, that could work. Cool. This does not change. This likely doesn't change my ultimate opinion on the sequel to the Sonic movie, which will start out as okay. My favorite reaction to this was like somebody tweeted very naively, you know, just we have to get ready for people saying they want to bang the echidna from Sonic the Hedgehog, and then like 10 minutes later they followed up and like just with a post in the thread saying it's been brought to my attention that people already wanted to bang the echidna from Sonic the Hedgehog.
Yep.
Oh man.
Yeah, you know what? What's really going to be nice is there's not going to be a whole debacle requiring a rework of the character. I hope.
Oh yeah, with the character design. Yeah. If it feels like they learned from touching that particular stove.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. The boxing glove hands in the announcement picture don't look like they would actually allow you to climb anything. But you know, that's
they didn't in the cartoon either.
Gritty realism is not what we're here for.
I didn't realize he was supposed to be wearing gloves.
Yeah, all of them are. I mean, it's gloves, yeah. like Mickey Mouse is wearing gloves.
Yeah, okay. It's a sprite with 3 pixels dedicated to the hand.
Yeah. Yeah. This could be cool. I just that makes as much sense as anybody that they could you know, put in there. And I'm happy to see Idris getting work. Because it's good work.
My response, why not?
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. Like I said, they've earned enough goodwill for me to be like, yeah, all right, let's do it.
Did your kids dig? Did they like the movie?
Yeah, that was the last movie we went to before COVID got bad.
Yeah.
And we were one of two groups in the movie theater. So we had the complete run of the place, nice. Which is good because, you know, Luke gets very excited in like combat scenes or scary parts and literally was just streaking up and down a row of seats. While watching. He'd like pause and watch the screen and then run because he was too excited and pause and watch the screen. And it was a very special kind of movie magic that maybe we'll recapture. Like I think we've said before, like Sonic was the last movie I saw before COVID, and it's very possible it could be the first movie I see back going to the sequel. So
yeah, wow. Well, yeah. So I will say that my niece's birthday is in 10 days, and she wants a Sonic birthday party.
Nice. So. Oh man,
that is a girl that's going places.
Yeah, I had a couple of Sonic birthdays. It's just weird how evergreen these things are. Yeah, nice. David, did you have a story, or were you not bringing one?
Nope, I am slacking off.
No, you said at the beginning, in the interest of keeping the episode short, which I agree with, I'm tired. So how do you all feel about bundling it up?
Attaboy, David.
Attaboy. Hey, thank
you. That's how I roll.
I almost didn't do the attaboy.
We have to put it in. It's obligatory. Buttons.
The thank you. The credit. Thank you so much, everybody, for tuning in for this level number 381. It's been a good time. Thank you, everybody here, for hopping on. I have enjoyed speaking with y'all. As far as admin goes, just a whole bunch of the usual. Facebook, Patreon, ratings, reviews, subscribe, all of that good stuff. Jala, once again, you want to plug the appearance you're making?
Mm-hmm. On episode 169 of the SNES podcast.
Nice. Talking about Chrono Trigger, is there anything that I'm forgetting?
I've got a new one, so you're not forgetting it, you just haven't heard about it.
Okay.
For Deck of Wonders, I am starting to do another big tour of art reveal interviews. So going on and like just hanging out with some content creators in the board game space. And then at the end, we show a piece of art that has not been revealed to the world yet. They have been a blast. They will be going up soon. The first one, I think, is with a YouTube channel called Dice and Dragons. But there will be a whole bunch of them. And Lauren Brown's work is freaking phenomenal. So I'm very excited to get more Deck of Wonders art out to everyone. Keep an eye out for art reveal interviews going up soon.
Yeah, and they can watch your social media for that, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Cool. Awesome. Well, I've been Cole Ross. You can catch my streams on the DuckFeed Twitch channel, twitch.tv/DuckFeedTV.
I've been Dennis Furia. You can follow me at Deck of Wonders on Instagram and at Deck of Wonders with underscores between the words on Twitter.
Okay.
I'm David Mysmith. You can follow me until I get a restraining order.
And I'm Jalatan in places where I may be found.
And stick around for some titles. I only wrote down one, but I don't know that I want to use it. Pick-crossed lovers.
I only wrote down one.
Mm-hmm.
Slop it up, piggies.
Okay.
That's pretty good.
Okay.
I've got exponentially hyperbolically.
Okay.
And then I have like having a Twitch chat.
I said that with love.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
like having a Twitch chat. David?
I got nothing.
Attaboy. How do we feel about Slop It Up, Piggies?
Love it.
That got the laughs.
Mm-hmm. Wait.
Cool. Yeah, I'm going to go and pass out and try and sleep.
Me too. Not a bad idea. Yeah, see you guys around.
Take care, everybody.
Night-night.
Bye. Thanks.
Night-night.